Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We are about to have a conversation here with one of our Urbanite radio stories. This is a story that appeared in this month's Urbanite about the Duncan Street Miracle Garden and how Baltimore is changing the nature of its face with all of this. And we're joined in studio right now by Lewis Sharp, who is manager of the Duncan Street Miracle Garden. It's good to meet you, Lewis. Welcome.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Let me get you all to slide those microphones a little bit closer to your faces there so we can get you right there. We're good enough. And Beth Stroman, who is manager of the Baltimore Office of Sustainability. Good to have you back.
Thank you.
Miriam Avens, who is Avens, right? Miriam Avens, who is founder of the Baltimore Green Space, a nonprofit land trust. She started Homestead Harvest in 2004, a cooperative organic vegetable garden in Better Waverly. And welcome to you as well.
It's good to be here.
And folks, join us out there, 410-319-8888. If you're watching us on the web here at steinershow.org, you can call 410-319-8888 anywhere in America. It's toll-free, and you can just join us. I'd love to hear about community gardens wherever you live, to hear your thoughts and all that, 410-319-8888. So I love this story. This is great. And Lewis Sharp, I really am dying to hear how this – give our listeners who have not read The Urbanite yet this story about how you all started this garden and what the history of it was.
It all come up in the year of 1988. It was a couple of vacant lots around an area between Chester and Carlton Avenue, between North and Lafayette. They tore the houses down in that area, and during the time, the people, they started using it for a dumping space. And so at that time, the neighbors and the community, they got together and said, we need to do something about our neighborhood because it turned to be a dump place. So then we went to the city and asked the city about could we do anything with the lots. And they say if we clean the lots up, they would help us improve them by giving them whatever we need. Like with houses, they threw the houses down, so we had to put dirt in. They hauled dirt in and dumped it, and we sprayed it and got it to look like half decent looking. Then we decide, we say, we can planting food. And didn't nobody know anything about it, but I had a little experience with it. So what I did, we was riding down Baltimore Street, and was a couple of small gardens down through there. And they give a little information on how they started. So we got started, and we got seeds, and we got donations from different organizations, Parks and People and Hubcaps. They give us donations to get fencing to put around the lots. And we cleaned the lots, and then we went to special different places and got seeds. People donate seeds, and we buy seeds, and we got it started. And it all come together, and it's got to look like a different place. And we just kept growing and growing and growing. And then I had a vision one night. This garden needs some improvement. Like different things.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have any apple trees, no peach trees, no grapes, and we had no strawberries, none of that kind of stuff. So I said, let's change the name of the garden from Duncan from Farrell's Association to Duncan Street Miracle Gardens.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I started getting catalogs. They sent me catalogs, and I started ordering stuff out of the catalogs. So I started planting the strawberries and the grapes and all that stuff. And then proved that we got a few trees, which was they call them miracle trees, because they had one tree got plums, peach, and apricots on it. And then I ordered another tree they call a fruit cocktail tree. It got different kind of cherries and peaches and different kind of fruits on it.
Mm-hmm,
I can't
mm-hmm.
name all off the top of my head right now. And then later on, we started getting new members in, and we started doing more in the garden, new spots, and more organizations started sponsoring us. And so then we got we had a small fence. They donated a larger fence, and which we took the fence, was 6-foot fence, and put it around the garden. But didn't nobody really bother it. We didn't have no problem, but we still kept the fence then, you know. So, and just from there, we just kept traveling on until we got where we're at right now. And, it's a beautiful garden right now. If you could just go see it and what had improved, and we're still doing certain things. And I still all like Miracle Garden. If anything, you come in the garden and ask, but you don't know anything about it, you can find it in Duncan Street Miracle Gardens. because we have all different kinds of plants and different kinds of fruit trees and stuff in the garden.
So, now, when you started this in 1980, I mean, this is the city said go ahead with it, but it was, I mean, in many ways, people in the neighborhood were just saying, "Let's land's empty, we're going to use it."
Right. And the culture was adopt a lot. Each year we would have to fill out an application and get the lot for that year. As each year we had to adopt a lot.
So this is, I mean, one of the things that this seems to be, you seem to have been way ahead of the game. I mean, 20-some years, 30 years maybe ahead of this game. You said you started in 1980?
88.
Right. So this is years and years ahead of the game in terms of where the rest of the country is, which is turning urban America into a garden. I mean, I'm curious. Now, the neighborhood is a good working class neighborhood, but it's a tough neighborhood. A lot going on with unemployment, drugs, houses being being abandoned and stuff.
Yes.
So how have people respected the garden over these years?
Well, they enjoy it because most of them say they get in the winter in the evening and look out there, see us out there working the garden and see all the stuff come, to how beautiful the stuff looking, how, you know, we try to keep it organized. It's like you plant a row of corn, we try to keep everything straight, you know, keep it all, you know, in line with each other. And we just keep adding. So, like I said, we give me something to do. I go there the first day in the morning and start working in the garden. And I take a lunch break. I sit down and eat me a lunch. And next thing you know, I'm sitting up in the tree. I'm asleep.
Now, are you retired?
Yeah, I retired in '89.
From the steel mill? Is that what I read?
No, Rickon. Rome's Rickon and Transfer. Rickon Company.
Yeah.
35 years with the company. And I really enjoyed the work, but I had health problems that come out.
That's a good thing. Most people don't have retirement anymore. It's a good thing you had the retirement to retire with.
Yes, sir.
So, what's going on in this town? This is a great example of kind of how this has begun to explode. This has been one of your best showmen. I know one of your dreams in this town is to create this urban farming
right,
in our
community. Right, basically take advantage. I think, you know, one of the other shows that I was on with you was the shrinking cities.
Right.
And taking advantage of available space that used to be housing and turn it into beautiful spaces that benefit the community. But also, I have to say, because the farming aspect, Baltimore City has a very large number of what they call food deserts, which mm-hmm. are places where there is an inadequate supply of healthy food. And we can use not only the community open spaces and the gardening, but also this farming, more of a commercial farming techniques, to help fill those gaps and bring food to those areas directly from those areas.
Is that really working?
Well, we're just getting started. Okay, uh-huh. So the commercial farming piece is an experiment that we're just getting into, if you will. Obviously, the community gardens, they occur organically, to use a term.
No pun intended.
Yes, no pun intended. And they're, you know, the communities are helping to feed themselves with these gardens. And because the gardens are there and the neighbors are teaching each other, they're helping each other to learn about food. But we need to make this happen faster and in a larger scale, if you will, because there's just still too big a gap. So I don't know if you want me to go on from there.
Well, we'll come back. I want to hear how we're going to get to mm-hmm. these places. That's what you're about to talk about, right, how mm-hmm. we can build this. And I want to get our listeners, before we introduce Miriam Avens to the audience here, 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com, 410-319-8888. I'd love to hear about your communities, gardens in your communities. Are you a gardener? What's happening with the vacant lots in your neighborhood? I know some people have just kind of taken them over and started planting, and that's been happening for years. I'm curious what goes on and how you think about that and how you think about what your vision might be of Baltimore or any other community in this nation that takes over its vacant properties and vacant lots, I should say, not vacant properties, vacant lots, and turns them into something that's useful for all the people, and how we might reinvent our city this way, in a way we live in our urban areas. Which is what people like Lewis Sharp have done single-handedly with his friends in his neighborhood. And that's something they did it because why? Because it was there and he wanted to do it.
Right.
410-319-8888. So, Miriam, even before we open the phones here, talk about green space. So introduce that to our listeners who may have no idea what that means.
Sure. Baltimore Green Space is a land trust, and that means that we own properties. on behalf of the neighborhoods that take care of them. We were founded in 2007, and we now protect two gardens and one horseshoe pit. The horseshoe pit's in Pigtown, and it's one little row house lot. And the gardens, one is in Upper Spells Point, and the other is the Duncan Street Miracle Garden. Basically, what people do what Mr. Sharp's done. They take what was vacant land and turn it into a community asset. They get rid of blight and create wonderful things everyone can enjoy. But there's never any security. If you do adopt a lot every year, that's great, but there's no promise that it won't be sold. And with so many vacant lots in the city, even if city government doesn't want to sell your vacant lot that you're using for a garden because it's not really vacant, they don't know. It's an information problem. They can't know where all these are. So the mission of Baltimore Green Space is to protect community-managed open spaces. It's kind of a clunky term, but it takes in things like the horseshoe pit, not just gardens, and own them on behalf of the neighbors and provide liability insurance, some technical assistance, things like that, so they really can go on forever and ever.
I want to ask you all three of you a question, but let me go to the phones here. People are calling in. I want to get them into this conversation at 410-319-8888. As we talk about green spaces, talk about gardens in our communities, vegetable gardens, flower gardens, recreating a sense of community in Baltimore and how that could really change. I mean, we drive around this town and we see vacant lots everywhere, just dead rats, junkies, whatever's in those places. They can be changed and transformed into something for people to live in and have community space to share. What do you think of that? How should we reinvent this city? And every city in America could do this. Right. When I was in Detroit for the U.S. Social Forum, we drove around and visited urban farms in Detroit. They're happening everywhere. So what about in our town? 410-319-8888. Wanda, in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Wanda.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I think this is a fabulous subject, and I actually have a question for the gentleman, Gardner, on your show.
Louis Sharp.
Mr. Sharp, I was wondering a couple of things. One is, when you harvest the foods from your garden, are they sold to the members of your community at like a discounted rate? And also, like for homeless individuals in your community, they have the opportunity to share and at least have access to some nutrition of sorts? And I guess the third question, as I was on hold, thinking, do you encourage children in the community to kind of jump in and get their hands dirty?
Well, we try to do that. We get a few children in. But for the harvest, I don't sell anything. God bless me, so I try to bless somebody else. We give it to soup kitchens, churches, and neighborhood. And anybody passing through that want anything out of the garden, we'll just give it to them. We don't sell anything.
So that's interesting. But you really do make an effort to give these out to soup kitchens and places who need it.
Yeah. We try to help as much as we can with the soup kitchens and the neighborhood. Whatever they want, they can get it. No prices.
How much do you think you harvest every year, edible food?
It's hard to say, sir.
It's a lot.
It's a whole lot. I'm telling you, every day when it's coming in, it's coming in. So, and I tell you, we just all different kinds of stuff. That's why I call it Miracle Garden. Anything like different color peppers and different kind of cucumbers, anything that's gigantic, we try to do something with it. Try to make something so make the neighborhood, hold up the neighborhood to say Miracle Garden. That's what we're trying to do. Keep the name up.
Miracle Garden time, 410-319-8888. So Beth, you were about to talk about this vision. I mean, I things are going on at Clifton Park at the high school.
That's right.
Where they're putting up hoop houses to grow things.
Mm-hmm.
There are, I know, private entrepreneurial things talking about taking pieces of abandoned or reclaiming land along the harbor to build hoop houses in a commercial way. I mean, there's a lot of ideas floating out there.
That's right. And actually, we're being approached, the city that is, almost weekly by different farming organizations, such as you just mentioned at the Clifton High School. There's the Safe Healing Foundation, which is operating there, and Real Food Farm. Big City Farm is down at the harbor area in the Middle Branch. And then, of course, Greg Strella and the Great Kids Farm, the schools. All of these organizations have the capacity, utilizing something called hoop house technology or high tunnels, to actually farm almost year-round and do it organically on a very small piece of land. And so we're hoping to, what we're doing right now at the city level is identifying parcels of land. We've met with the farmers to find out what their needs are, and we're going to be basically packaging these parcels, if you will, and then advertising either a request for proposals or request for qualifications to let people come and say, hey, this is what we would do on this parcel of land in terms of farming. The idea there being that we would enter into a lease with them, and it would be as much production as it might also be education, green jobs related to farming and things of that nature.
So, folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. We see some calls coming in. I really want to bring up any issue you want around this, about how to recreate our city with empty lots, farms, gardens, what you would do with it. And maybe you have some ideas that you'd share with the folks who are actually running these places right now. So about what you would do with it, and get some wisdom from Lewis Sharp, who's been doing it for 22 years. But let's get your thoughts about how what you would like to do. How would you transform your neighborhood with a community garden? Maybe some of you have been talking about it already, talking with your neighbors about it, and have some ideas. So bring those ideas to us at 410-319-8888. We'd love to hear them and get your thoughts on all that. I mean, Lewis Sharp, do you think that when you look at your garden,
yes, sir,
and you see the beauty you've created and the food that's growing and the flowers and the rose bushes and all the things you put in there, I mean, do you think about what this might look like for an entire city, what it might be for the beyond your garden?
I really don't know how I could put that into words, but it would really improve the city if they would get these vacant lots cleaned up, put something with no more plant trees and flowers, put picnic benches so the seniors don't have anywhere really to go but inside. Let them get outside and get some fresh air in. Let them put up trees and little parks and put little grills and something, and let them go out there, sit in the evening, play chess or something. They got one of those chess things right on Chase and Moffat Avenue. It's real nice, and I haven't had a chance to go around there. There's a little improvement I see that need to be done around there that I could really improve it a little bit more. And it's a nice place, though.
I mean, this idea, if it really takes hold, could be phenomenal. I mean, we could make the idea of urban farming and transforming this city into an urban farm. It's not like pie in the sky. People go, oh, you can't feed people here. I was telling you earlier, we just came back from doing some stories for our series on Delmarva, and we went to this organic farm, amazing organic farm, and they are feeding over 500 families on 150 acres, 15 acres of vegetables. They feed all these people.
Right.
You know, 15 acres.
Yes.
You know? I have some in my car. I'm going to get home as soon as I can cook that grass-fed steak and make those radishes and eat that tonight. But I mean,
yes, sir.
What time do we come over?
So it is there. I mean, so let's talk a bit about the vision of what you think Baltimore could look like.
Well, I think in many places, people really are retrofitting their neighborhoods with amenities that should have been there in the first place. We have plenty of parkland in Baltimore, but it's not necessarily where it needs to be for people to easily walk to it and to enjoy it. And beyond parks, I mean, parks are wonderful. But when people garden someplace and take care of it and really feel ownership, it brings this whole new level of caring to their lives and contact with nature. The community garden near my house, we've got these boys who come in looking for snakes all the time. And it's sort of a nuisance because, of course, they don't put the bricks back where they need to be. But I just love the fact that kids can come in and touch nature. And there was this one kid one year who was just fascinated by the compost. And so the more there are of these places around, the more that kids really grow up with an appreciation that they live in a natural world and they know where food comes from. There were some kids coming around one day looking for salsa ingredients, and they were garden hopping through Better Waverly looking for salsa ingredients.
Maybe before we jump in, Beth, let me just go to the phones here. Folks are calling in at 410-319-8888. It's great to see these people so interested in something so important for our communities and your ideas about how to get us to this place. Linda in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi there. Good evening. How
Good evening,
you?
Linda.
Hello.
You're on the air. Go ahead. I said, go ahead.
Okay.
Yes,
I was calling because I wanted to find out where this miracle garden is. And first of all, I would like to compliment all of you who are being a blessing to those, you know, that you can be a blessing to. And I just want to tell you that your well will never run dry. But I would love to be a blessing to you and come and shop, you know, and buy some of those vegetables also and fruits, where I could also be a blessing to someone who may, you know, need those things. But I definitely want to know where you're located. Where is this Miracle Garden?
Lewis Shop.
Well, it's in East Baltimore. Where you live at?
Catonville area.
Catonville?
Uh-huh.
Well, we're in East Baltimore. Do you know anything about the city, Baltimore City?
Yes, yes.
Do you know about North Avenue?
Yes.
East North Avenue?
Yes.
If you come down East North Avenue to the 21 block East North Avenue.
2100 block?
Of East North Avenue, uh-huh. Yes, ma'am. It's between Chester and Carlton Avenue, and it's called Duncan Street Gardens. And once you get in that area, you can't miss it. There's plenty of signs up in the, letting you know where you're at. You won't get lost. So, and it would be nice if you could come and see it. I think you would enjoy it. And I even have a scrapbook sometime if you all want to come by and take a look at how the garden first started out when the lot was dirty and messed up and everything before we cleaned it off. We have all those pictures of that. So anything that, you know, that I can help you with, ma'am, I'd be glad to do it. So.
And we will put that information on our website, steinershow.org, so you find out more about the garden and see pictures of it and see how to get there and connect to the Overnight article. Mm-hmm. And go visit Mr. Sharp and this miracle garden. Yes. Thank you for calling, Linda. 410-319-8888. Sandy, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Sandy.
Question is for Mr. Sharp. Mm-hmm. I'm calling about how he started the garden and what advice he might have for rookie gardeners who just want something that they can kind of work in with their kids after work. What plants have they found are easier to grow in our climate with our amount of rainfall and sunlight? And what advice would he have for other city dwellers who want to start something similar in their home?
Well, everything's just but easy. But if you get already plants from the farmers that's already been planted, that's something that you can sell out is better than seeds. So if you know it's still a seed, use the plant. Because we have one group that comes in, the young lady, she have a group of kids that come in there. In daycare, she gets them in, she give them a seed and put them in a spot and let them plant the seeds. And when they come back, the seed is up, you ought to see how amazed the children used to see something like that, you know. They want to know how the seed get like that, you know. But it's a beautiful thing, hon. I tell you, you really enjoy it because I do. And I just like to go home at night, come back the next morning, look at the stuff, how it grew overnight. You know, it's amazing, you know.
It is, I'm sure. I can't wait. I know, I've only seen pictures. I've got to come down and see the
yes,
garden.
Yes, sir. I got all kinds of pictures. And, but, so, like I said,
there's some also organizations in the city that can be really helpful.
Yeah.
And those include the Master Gardeners, who have a lot of really good advice and can often help start, give technical advice in starting a garden. Parks and People Foundation is also really helpful. And together, the University of Maryland Extension and Parks and People have this wonderful program called the Community Greening Resource Network, or CGREEN for short. And for community gardens, they have like giveaway days and tool sheds and this calendar that combines all the different workshops that different organizations are doing. So there's a lot of really good institutional resources to pull on.
Number is 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. There's a huge amount of interest in this, obviously, because they've got folks calling in from all over here to talk about and ask questions and be part of this conversation. Let's go to who is next here? Mike, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
How are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
I've seen the community gardens all across Baltimore City a number of years. What I wanted to present to the listeners and to your panel is the idea of urban farming. Taking it to the point where people in the communities are able to grow their own food on a level that they can feed themselves. And one of the areas that in particular would be that of growing fish in an urban environment, from from the point of taking the fish eggs, harvesting the eggs, and growing them from small fish to market-sized fish, selling them, and having it in a process where, you know, you have a cycle where they grow, and in one tank you move them to another tank, and from another tank to another.
Right, right, right.
Have that process.
Well, Beth?
Well, actually, yeah, I wanted to jump in because actually there are probably a lot of people sitting out there going, that's crazy, and actually it's not.
It's not crazy.
No.
Absolutely not.
There are a lot of people talking about that, and I don't remember exactly which city, but I think in Wisconsin they are doing it. The same situation where they have this, it's the hoop house technology that helps you do it. But you, it can be done. I'd like to see. I've never seen it done here, but that doesn't mean it can't be done. And I would agree that I would hope to see things like that happening in the future.
But in Baltimore, am I blocking on his name? Zohar Zoni, who the Israeli scientist who works at the University of Maryland.
Right.
He has he's doing that now. I mean,
in a much more controlled environment than this would be.
But the idea there is that we could actually do it. It's like taking, instead of having fish farms in the water itself, like the harbor, and I don't know if I would eat anything out of the harbor anyhow, but stuff in the harbor, is that you could take empty warehouses in Baltimore and cities across the country and build fisheries inside those warehouses where they've developed technology now when the fish's fecal matter is then turned back into clean water, pumped back in, so you're constantly recycling the water, and you can grow. They've for the first time in history, they are the first people to ever raise crabs.
Yes, that's right.
In a contained environment,
yep.
And so it's possible. I mean, it depends where we want to put our resources,
right,
as a community and in business investment. But it could be done.
It could be done. It's just, you know, we have to balance the startup costs and things of that nature. But I think that it's just rapidly becoming more and more possible with each passing year.
Well, if you think instead of like 5 or 10 years out, if people begin to think 30 or 40 years out, so maybe the people who make the profit are your children and grandchildren, then maybe we can get there. Instead of always thinking about us making
right,
the profit.
Exactly.
Think about what comes after us. 410-319-8888. Let's see who's been on holding on for a long time here. Melvin, you're on the air. Hi, Melvin, you're on the air.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Yes. First, I'd like to congratulate your panel and say thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a question. I got in the rear of this conversation, but is there any plans in the work to, like, implement a non-profit organization and go to the city to purchase land, to do these gardens?
There is. As a matter of fact, the woman in the middle of that is right here, Miriam Mavens. You're on the air.
Yeah, we've done it. It's Baltimore Green Space, and that is our mission, is to protect community-managed open spaces that residents have created and maintain in their communities. And if you'd like to learn more about exactly what we do, our website is baltimoregreenspace.org, and you can also give us a call at 443-695-7504. Basically, communities come to us and ask us to acquire properties so that they know it's always going to be there for them. Once we do that, we have an agreement with the people in the neighborhood where basically they do the work because that's what they like to do. And we own the property. If there's going to be something like a tax issue or something, it comes to us first. And we get to deal with all the fun parts of it, land ownership. I think of it as sort of the boring white-collar solution to the fun stuff, which is getting out there and gardening.
I think this, I mean, we'll talk about this in a minute, how we can creatively plan. We have to take a short break here. Lewis, do you have to leave? Can you hang out for just a little bit more? You got to roll.
I got to roll.
That's too bad, because we have a bunch of questions here. We're calling questions for you.
Okay, well, like I said, we may can get together again, but like this, it's our anniversary, and we got to be there for that.
Folks, I was just going to let Lanyapa get here right fast to ask the question, but she hung up, so... we're going to take a very brief break. I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7000. 7555. We are here joined with one of our Urbanite Radio stories, Lewis Sharp, manager of the Duncan Street Miracle Garden that he created 22 years ago. Unfortunately, he has to leave, but without him, we wouldn't have this show today. Beth Stroman, manager of the Baltimore Office of Sustainability, is staying put, as is Miriam Avens, founder of the Baltimore Green Space, and started Homestead Harvest in 2004. A cooperative organic vegetable garden in Better Waverly. 410-319-8888. We have a bunch of folks waiting in line here. Dolores, Lois, Tommy, we'll come to your calls as soon as we return. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. I remind you that support for the Mark Steiner Show, Anthony McCarthy's show, and WEAA is provided by Watson Cleaners, offering personalized service for wedding special events, intimate dinners, and corporate events through the East Coast for 35 years. For information, 410-252-2222 or watsoncacaterers.com. And we are joined here in studio this hour by... right now, Beth Stroman, who's manager of the Baltimore Office of Sustainability, Miriam Avens, founder of Baltimore Green Space, a nonprofit land trust here in our community. Lewis Sharp was with us. He had to leave. He is manager of the Duncan Street Miracle Garden, which inspired this show because of the Urbanite story that was about that garden. And this is, of course, one of our Urbanite radio stories. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Dolores, you're on the air. Hi, Dolores, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well.
I'm trying to understand. I think it's a wonderful idea in terms of the urban farming. I'm trying to understand the control factor in terms of animal infestation, rodent infestation, bug infestation in your close communities where you do have torn down houses and open space.
Mm-hmm.
But you, how do you control the infestation that will come in as a result of the gardening?
That's a great question.
It is. Well, I'll tell you, in the community garden next to my house, the bug infestation we're dealing with the most is the same kind of thing they've got, you know, out where there's real regular big farms, those nasty beetles that have been eating up our collards for 2 years. Some people worry about things like rats, and some gardens have them. Some gardens don't have them so much. What I find in talking to a lot of gardeners is if the neighborhood is really infested, then you'll find it in the garden. If the neighborhood's more under control, then it's more under control. For us, getting rid of a tree stump was a big deal. And then when I got a cat, boy, did everything change. So it's very individual. I've seen at Duncan Street Garden, Mr. Sharp growing watermelon in a box, in like this cage. And that was about the rats, and they've done some other things about that. But in terms of insects and stuff, it's, you know, that's a gardener's life. If it's not this insect this year, it'll be that one next year.
But I think the spirit of her question was more about the dangers of attracting more pests than would be there if the garden
wasn't there.
That's
not been the experience at all, actually. I think Miriam was dead on. As far as the rats, what I've seen is the exact same thing. They're there. If they're there in huge numbers in the neighborhood already, then they're going to be a problem in your garden, and you have to control the rat issue really by controlling your neighbors and their trash first. As far as the other insects, they don't attract the insects that you find inside the house. Okay,
you know, not flies.
Yeah, it's what they do is, as Miriam noted, how fascinating to me is that, you know, there probably hasn't been a insect that eats squash plants in that area for years, and all of a sudden you plant a squash plant. How did they know? I mean, they arrived, the squash bugs, you know. I had a praying mantis in my garden this year, which I thought was wonderful.
That's great.
Yeah, you know, I mean, somehow he found us. You know.
On the plus side, there's the butterflies, there's the goldfinches. You plant sunflowers, all of a sudden there's goldfinches in the middle of Baltimore City.
But, there's no additional flies, there's no additional roaches or things of that nature, because those are actually urban insects that live inside the house. They don't actually – are not attracted by the garden.
Let me go back to the phones here. 410-319-8888. The next caller up is Lois. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Lois.
I was really excited when I tuned into your show because I wanted to give you some information. Someone mentioned someplace in Milwaukee where they do the aquaponics, the hoop houses. In actuality, on 2 acres of land, they feed, I couldn't even tell you how many people, but I know at least 2,000 people. They have a garden year-round. I took their course last year. I went to Milwaukee in January. The name of the company is Growing Power.
Yes.
There we go.
And the director is Will Allen.
And he's been on the show before.
Yep.
Okay.
I knew
and
it.
Then,
yep.
Then in Kilmarnock, Virginia, which is a beautiful area on the northern neck of Virginia, there's a lady by the name of Kathy Calhoun, who is probably just the best expert in fish farming. Her fish, I can tell you that it's not the traditional type of farm, the fish farming, where you have to be careful when you go in the store buying the fish. She has a state-of-the-art facility in Kilmarnock, Virginia. Again, her name is Kathy Calhoun.
Thank you.
And I am really excited because I had my garden in containers for the past 2 years. I had never had a garden before in my life. And this year I had about 80 containers.
Wow.
We actually set up containers on four different properties or houses in the Bowie area. And it was just so much fun for people to come out and see cucumbers in a container and, you know, just squash and zucchini and whatever. So I had, because I live in a subdivision, I had all of these containers on the deck. And I tell you, I had a wonderful crop. I could control the soil because I don't have to worry about the runoff of chemicals from someone else's yard. Also, I could control the amount of water that my plants got. And I do the composting in Virginia. And I have the red wiggler worms for my fertilizer. So I'm really excited about what I do. I really am.
So you're into it, and you're doing it.
By profession, I'm a nurse.
Uh-huh.
I'm so focused on health that I know that if our bodies don't get the right nutrition, if we're getting all of these chemicals that are being sprayed on our fruits and vegetables, we're not going to be a healthy nation.
Well, Lois,
so I am just really excited.
I can tell. That's a good thing.
Yes, it is.
I think that what you're saying is incredibly important, especially the idea that we have to do something to turn around the way people eat and what they consume. This idea of taking the abandoned places in our communities, and I just don't mean the properties, I mean the people who have been abandoned by the greater society, and turning something around like this would be an amazing thing if we actually did it full force.
Yeah, so. I totally agree with you on that. I think that you can bring life back to a community. I mean, Miriam has actual studies, or they're not official, what do you call it, school-based studies, but where in some cases where there were shootings on a corner and they converted the corner into a garden, a beautiful rose garden, the shooting stopped. That, you know, gardens bring neighbors together that might not have known each other before or met each other. There's just so many benefits to these gardens. They feed people. They make you feel better about your neighborhood. They raise property values. There are studies that show that that's a fact. So actually the city's not losing tax dollars, if you will, by turning these gardens, these spaces into gardens. They're actually, we're gaining tax dollars because we're getting people we're feeding people, we're making them healthier, we're raising property values. There's just so many benefits to these community gardens that, you know, people don't count on it normally.
410-319-8888. And thanks so much for that call, Lois. I'd like you to tell us more about what you're doing there. I think that the idea of the way you're growing containers, I mean, people could do that anywhere they live, on their roofs, on their porches, back
and
porches,
should.
Front porches, and should. And I think that you're doing is great, and I'm so happy that you went off to Milwaukee to work with Will Allen, who's just an amazing human being who had the foresight and brilliance to kind of really push this as a major movement in this country, which he's done. 410-319-8888. Let's see. Tommy, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Tommy. You're on the air.
Okay, thank you. I'm extremely interested in what you're doing. ask a couple questions I have to ask.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is, what do you do about the soil when you have an urban garden? And when they tear down the building, as you know, there's a lot of lead dust and everything that... What do you do to clean up the soil? If it was a construction site, they typically come in and clean up the soil.
Right, right. No, that's a great question.
Does this happen?
Well, let me get your second question. So hold on. Let me let Miriam answer the first one.
When people do start a garden, it's really a good idea to do a lead test. And there's labs, not in Maryland anymore, but there's lots of labs where you can send a test and they tell you how to dig up a little soil and do it. What's really interesting is that over time, as you garden, lead gets bound organically in the soil so that it's not even absorbable by the plants anymore. So not that I'm saying you should go out and garden in dirty, leady soil, but if you, what we're finding is with the gardens I'm working with is it seems to go down over time. And in one garden, they had all did all this food at first and they had all these kids involved, and then they did a lead test and they said, oh my. 10 years later, they tested the soil again, really no problem with the lead levels. So what they did was they did flowers for 10 years, and now they can go back to food. The garden I work with, we just didn't really have a big deal in most of the areas, and we amended like crazy. We put in lots of leaf mold, lots of stuff like that. And now it's pretty good, but it's certainly something people need to be aware of.
As the city of Baltimore rep, I would just like to say that we recommend that actually you just do a raised bed.
That's okay? another good way
to go. We've met with the Maryland Department of the Environment, and the safest thing to do is to just do a raised bed, because then the roots of the plants never actually get into the soil. And a raised bed is just that you basically what Mr. Sharp did in the beginning.
So.
They also just put boards. It's like a 6-inch wooden board, not the wood that's treated to be exterior lumber, but maybe a board made out of cedar or something of
the
that
newer
nature.
Stuff they're saying you can use.
I don't even.
Okay.
As the manager of the Office of Sustainability. But, you know, then you put fresh, clean soil. You put a barrier, maybe one of those black plastic or something like that down, and put the soil on top. You're not even in soil. You don't have to worry about what – it could be something other than lead in these urban soils. Just don't go there is my
– And if there was a truck garage there, don't do vegetables.
Don't do
vegetables.
Tommy, you had a second question?
Yes. What kind of seed do they use? Are they using truly organic seeds, or are they talking about seeds that have been patented, you know?
Yep.
I think in most community gardens that use organic methods, they're not really too concerned about the seeds. A lot of us go down and get our seeds from Meyer Seeds, or there's a lot of seed donations you can get in the city. Most of us are more focused on what are the methods.
Right.
But I hope they're not the, you know,
well, I think and what Tommy was saying, though, I think that one of the things I've been learning from farmers in this series we've been doing on Delmarva is that it's really hard to get real organic seeds, and even to be classified organic. And sometimes you don't even need to go that far, but it's almost impossible to do. I mean, when you buy, let's say, a chicken, and it's a free-range chicken, a chicken that's been grass-fed, well, a chicken might not be – you can't label it organic because it's almost impossible to get organic feed into the state of Maryland to feed your cattle or your chickens or whatever you're raising. So it's very tough, but you can be as organic as possible.
You should be.
You should be.
Yes.
But to get to that, the purity level is almost impossible to get to.
Yeah.
But Tommy, great questions. Thank you so much. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Donald. You're on the air.
Hello?
You're on the air, Donald.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Donald. I'm with the Baltimore Free Farm.
And what's that?
We're a group that does community gardens in Baltimore City.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping to just mention a fundraiser that we're doing on Kickstarter.com.
Okay.
We're trying to set up a warehouse across the street from our garden in Hamden as a sort of sustainability center where we can work on different sorts of projects like vermicomposting and rainwater collection and different various things, and host workshops for the public. And we need to do some repairs to the building to get it up and running. So the fundraiser is at kickstarter.baltimorefreefarms.org.
All right. I'm glad you let us know about that, and we'll put that up on the website, and we'll go check that out ourselves. That's the first I've heard of it.
Oh, okay.
That's great. So now, where is it in Hamden exactly? Where is your warehouse?
We're on Ash Street. It's part of the Ash Street Community Garden.
Okay. All right. Very good, man. I'm glad you called. I appreciate you calling.
Thank you.
Great. You know about these folks?
Oh, it's a beautiful garden. These folks got their Adopt-A-Lot in the winter, and it started working in the winter with lots of volunteer help, and they've done an amazing job over the course of a year.
What do we know? What do we know about the plans for the city to kind of really incorporate this into planning itself? In other words, the idea of having this land bank, I think, is a great idea. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's just phenomenal. We need to do that. But the question is, has always been, if not an afterthought, not part of a planning thought. In other words, when you see neighborhoods that have all these empty lots, just really thinking about how you would create a human open space, a park, a place for people to gather, a garden, and really making that part of a planning process that really can change the nature of the city and not make everything gentrified and pushing folks out and redoing houses.
Yeah, actually, there's two things to that. I'm going to start with the planning process, which is absolutely, that's a component of building sustainability into our community plans, is thinking about that. In the past, it wasn't even something that people raised as, where should we put, for example, a community garden, or would this make a great community garden? I think in the future, we'll be raising issues like that, thinking about living streets, greening the streets. Not just, I want a speed hump over here. But the second piece is one of the most important roles that government can play is actually removing barriers to people rolling up their sleeves and getting things done. Mm-hmm. There are so many people like Mr. Sharp out there. And what happens is they don't know where to go to get information sometimes, or when they do make calls, there are bureaucratic issues that might get in the way and stop people from moving forward. So an example of removing the barriers, I think, is what Miriam and I partnered on in this document, which basically sets up a process that when a community has a garden, it's established and they want to preserve it, that they can come to a land trust and they can approach the city with that land trust, and we will make it possible for them to save it forever, in a sense, by the city sells it to the land trust. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That took at least 6 months worth of digging and working with city agencies to, find out where the barriers were and resolve each of those individual barriers. And, we're going to be continuing to work on that as the Department of Housing and Community Development has really opened up to the concept that not every single parcel in the city of Baltimore that's vacant has to have a development project on it in the future.
That'd be nice if that actually was true, that we don't have to have a development project.
Right, because it's not part of our reality for the future. But this is part of our reality for the future, that there is appropriate places where community-managed open spaces and urban farms should be. And they can be there both in the short term, in terms of maybe there's a site that we know is going to be developed, but it's not going to be developed for 10 years. It shouldn't just sit there for 10 years and be a blight on the community. We've agreed that, these are places that we're considering for the farms. We would turn it into a farm and then make it possible for that farmer to move to another site in 10 years when it's appropriate for that site to be redeveloped. So there can be both permanent open spaces, permanent farms, and rolling farms and open spaces, if you will.
Rolling?
That's what I'm calling them. My word, I just invented.
I like that. What does that mean?
It just means it sort of rolls over to another piece of property when it's time for that place to be developed. Uh-huh. And you look at places like Park Heights where there's, we're hoping there's a complete transformation of that community in some of the vacant land. But you know that it's not going to happen for 5 years, 10 years. You don't want that land to just sit there vacant, So we got to find other uses that are a benefit to the community in that meantime.
So what is the plan? Oh, go ahead. Were you going to say something?
No. Oh, I think it's a good summary.
I'm just curious, just for about a minute left, what are the plans to really kind of implement this to make it really part and parcel of public policy?
Well, we've got this plan that me and Miriam worked on. Really, Miriam did all the work. It's called Preserving Community Managed Open Spaces. It's criteria and process, and that was the first piece. So that's the permanent preservation. The short term, and I'll talk fast because we have a minute, is I'm working and with Department of Housing and Community Development and other agencies. HABC is even helping out with this, and we're identifying properties where we're actually going to, in a sense, as I mentioned earlier, advertise, say, hey, this land's available. Farmers, come here. You know, we want you to farm this. The condition will be that they have to work with the community. They have to solve the food desert problems. You know, they can decide how they're going to do that. We're not going to tell them, but it's going to be a collaborative effort. We make the land available. They help us with these other issues.
I think this is great. It's really good to have you back on the air with us, Beth Shulman.
Thank you for inviting me.
Manager of the Baltimore Office of Sustainability, and Miriam Avins, founder of Baltimore Green Space, a nonprofit land trust in our community. Thanks. We were joined earlier by Lewis Sharp, who helped start the Duncan Street Miracle Gardens that he runs and manages. It was one of the articles in this month's Urbanite, one of our Urbanite radio stories. And it was great to have you all here to bring this to life.
Thank you.
And glad you all called in and had so much interest in a program like this. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. We'll be right back.